It's sad when a mother has to speak the words that condemn her own son. But I couldn't allow them to believe that I would commit murder. They'll put him away now, as I should have years ago. He was always bad. And in the end, he intended to tell them I killed those girls and that man. As if I could do anything except just sit and stare, like one of his stuffed birds. Well, they know I can't even move a finger, and I won't. I'll just sit here and be quiet, just in case they do suspect me. They're probably watching me. Well, let them. Let them see what kind of a person I am. I'm not even going to swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
White Area and Resistance Radio calling. White Area and Resistance Radio Network calling. This is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger in the bunker. Right here next door to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse. That's right. And it is May the 11th. 2015, Moon's Day. And we're off and running here with a new show, so get ready. Don't forget to send in your 20 smackers to Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And like I told you before, some people had asked me whether they could get the shows on CD or audio cassette. And I've said yes. If they don't have a computer and can't get it the other way, an MP3 file, I'll do that for them. But they have to ask me and send their $20 in, and we'll go from there. If any of you people have Roku out there for movies and so forth, there's an excellent coverage of news stories from around the world every day when you go to Euro News. And they give you film clips of news around the world on all kinds of things. I was watching this morning where they had a comment on the Germans who migrated to Azerbaijan in 1810 or 1819 and built a thriving German community in the Caucasus in Azerbaijan. And the German housing, the German kind of village and so forth, they're all still there. However, the last actual German died in 2007. They had it pretty rough, of course, in World War II because the Soviets took tremendous numbers of Germans out of the area and shipped them to Siberia and into Central Asia. So they sprinkled the German blood all around the place. So anyhow, that should be an interesting story, tracing these Germans that, first of all, colonized Azerbaijan, and then due to the war, were picked up and pushed out and taken other places. Very interesting. Well, let's see here. I've got something I think is interesting. I got a couple of things that are quite interesting that I taped, or I recorded. One is about a guy named Cecil. Now, Cecil's in the jail down in Phoenix, and he's a skinhead. But he's not. It doesn't appear that he's a real super committed skinhead. He's a lone wolf kind of skinhead, but not really adhering to my policies, I don't think, or anybody else's. He's his own man, and he's in this jail down there waiting trial, and he's a hard head. He's going to make it go to, they've offered him plea bargains and so forth, but he's going to go to a 12-man jury and try to beat the system, which is tricky, especially because he's got a lot of racial type tattoos. He got one swastika, I guess, on top of his head. But he doesn't take any crap from anybody because the blacks, you know, they single him out because of his tattoos, and he just comes out swinging. Of course, remember, blacks or Negroes have a tattoo at birth. it's their black or brown skin. However, Aryans or whites have their tattoo. Nature gives us a white skin, so we don't really need to do much more about it struggle for the white race. Anyhow, I'm going to play this for you. I hope the audio is pretty good here so you can catch on. Cecil's an interesting guy, and there's a whole lot of Cecils out there in the prisons that they're standing up for themselves, and they don't necessarily join anything inside the prison, but they're standing up for their white race, or at least themselves.
The 4th Avenue Jail in Maricopa County, Arizona, houses more than 2,000 male inmates, including those considered to pose the highest security risk. Racial tensions run high in this facility, as inmate Cecil Kunkel discovered shortly after our interview with him, in which he showed off his many tattoos. Kunkel and the inmate he fought, Robert Hurd, were placed in isolation cells and were unavailable to us pending an investigation. But Hurd's friends made their feelings about Kunkel crystal clear.
We don't like Cecil Kunkel.
Yeah, man. What's on his head, gonna get carved right off.
Yeah, man.
Scalp his head. Take that whole thing off.
Kill it.
Kill it back.
How's everybody know?
Because when you do so much talking and you catch so many enemies, it's not everybody else. At some point in time, you have to realize it's not everybody else. Maybe it's me. You see what I'm saying? That's as simple as it go get. It can't be everybody else in the world that keep over. Maybe you them over and they tired of
it. That's where you're from. I'm having a talk right there.
One, two, I'm coming for you.
Okay.
Three, four, gotta hit the floor.
Okay.
2 floors above 4th Avenue's general population lot is one of its highest security housing units, where inmates considered too dangerous to freely move among the rest of the population are housed. Albert Sermano has lived in one of these extremely sparse cells for nearly 4 years, as his case has lingered on in the courts.
It's like I'm never going to get out of my home for the rest of my life. I'm only 23 years old, you know? I've been here since I was 20.
Sermano is accused of taking part in a heinous murder.
They're trying to say I'm the one that planned it out and I'm the one that had everything to do with it. I mean, I'm the ringleader, basically, and so on.
And the prosecutor wants him to pay for the crime with his life.
And he says it was a brutal crime, that we didn't have no remorse from what we did to how we beat this dude up. And, like, we just didn't care. But it wasn't like that, you know what I mean? It's just we were up on dope, you know what I mean? We didn't know how to stop. None of us meant to hurt this dude like that, you know what I mean? It was a robbery gone bad, basically.
While prosecutors contend that Sermano was the ringleader, they say he wasn't alone. The jail currently houses 4 co-defendants who are especially close to him.
One's my mom, my brother, my ex-old lady, and my mom's boyfriend.
The district attorney says Sermano's girlfriend lured a 47-year-old man to Sermano's mother's home, and that when they arrived, Sermano and the others robbed and hogtied him before killing him with garden shears and dumping his body in the desert. Facing a possible death sentence, Sermano says he's tried to make the best of life at Maricopa.
I only went to 2 days of high school, but since I've been here these past 4 years, I taught myself how to read. I can read good now. I mean, I read all these books like crazy in here.
Yeah, there's some books for you, man. Here you go, Jamil. No problem, man.
I like the romance. Yeah, I like the romance books, but I like to read anything, westerns, mystery, action. I read anything. If it interests me and it's a little page turner, I'll read it. If it's not, then I'll just throw it away and give it to somebody else.
Back downstairs, Sergeant Shamrock is investigating the fight between Cecil Kunkel and Robert Hurd to determine if one or the other provoked it.
Talk to the inmates at hand, and if there's any further questioning that needs to be done, we'll talk to the officers and we may review some cameras and come to a determination the exact amount of discipline that we're going to give them. Robert Hurd, is that you?
going on, sir?
How you doing?
All right.
You got a write-up here, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, what happened?
Pretty much, man. No, I didn't have no 401 or anything, man. I just got that first, man.
Because what I'm reading here, from what the officer's saying, that it was a mutual conduct fight between you and the other inmate.
Well, all you got to do is look at the camera, man.
And you want me to review the camera?
Yeah.
I can do that, but at this point, you may sit in here for another couple of days until I get determination of your involvement in the incident. And I'll come back and talk to you in a little bit when I get some more information.
All right.
Okay?
Shamrock then visits Kunkel to get his side of the story.
Mr. Kunkel, I'm here to see you again. This is like twice in like 3 weeks. What's going on?
Nothing.
Do you recall this incident with Mr. Hurd?
No, I'm not saying nothing.
You're not saying nothing? You don't want to work with me on this?
What? There ain't nothing there.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to put an extension on this incident. I'm going to investigate it. You want me to review cameras or film? I'll go ahead and do that. Well, that's what you're going to get. You got an officer that's saying one thing. You're telling me you know nothing about it. I got a guy down there that's telling me he's a victim. Okay?
That's up to you.
That's
what I'm saying. Why do you got to go interview tapes and all that? It keeps me in here longer.
Well, you're looking at 30 days in here.
I know.
Okay? You're not helping me out in this situation. I'm here to help you. I'm here to listen to what you got to tell me. What you're saying is nothing. It's not even jiving with this thing here. You got nothing else to add to this thing?
Nope.
Okay. I'll have a determination made by the end of the day.
A short time later, Kunkel asked to speak with Shamrock again.
When I came back and spoke with him, he told me, he said, look, you know what? He goes, I was involved in a fight. I asked him where he got the scratches from his face, and he said the other guy hit me a couple of times, but it was mutual, and right now it's squashed. So he really doesn't have any issues with the guy right now.
Coming up, Maricopa's special response team attempts to recover a homemade cup key from an inmate considered to be especially dangerous. And later, they turn the jail inside out in search of a very important missing key.
The set of keys for the armory, for some reason, we've got a bathroom key on there, and a lot of civilians borrow that key to use the restroom.
The Maricopa County Jail in Phoenix is handled by detention officers, sheriff's deputies assigned to the jail, and who are the front line in maintaining order. They're backed up by the jail's intelligence division, which is constantly gathering information on potential problems before they can escalate.
The key's going to look like this.
Okay.
It's going to be just pretty much etched out of the toothbrush.
Okay.
All right. So, but we got to hit him quick because if not, he'll swallow it.
All right.
The 4th Avenue Jail's Intelligence Division suspects one of its maximum security inmates of having a homemade handcuff key.
Do the cells in 4 Bravo 200, 100, 3, 4, do they have the back windows into the water wells?
Yes, they do.
They do. Okay, we're going to be monkeying around in your water well, so if you call the briefing room and I don't answer right away, just give me a couple of minutes to get back here.
Sergeant Nicholas heads the special response team that will attempt to retrieve the key. But to prevent the inmate from swallowing it, they must catch him by surprise.
All right, let's go to the water well. What the water well is, it's basically a plumber's access. You know, the toilets are mounted against the wall, the sink's mounted against the wall. We don't necessarily go in the cell to fix these. We go into the back water well. It's a big walkway. It's just full of plumbing. Well, since we've got the water well built, they decided, hey, let's put windows. We go on a security walk. The inmates see us. They know we're there. Okay, we can go in the water wells, turn off all the lights, and we can peer in those back windows. If the windows aren't covered with obstacles, the deodorant, papers, towels, they think these security windows are a shelf for them to put their junk when they're not.
Sergeant Nicholas makes his way through the darkened water well to cell 6 in order to check on the inmate suspected of having the homemade cup key.
Cell 6 right here, but he's got his window blocked, so I don't know what he's doing inside.
With his first surveillance attempt foiled, Nicholas turns to more conventional means to confirm the inmate is asleep.
What's your security lock?
Nicholas asks one of the jail's detention officers to walk by the inmate's cell.
Don't do anything out of the ordinary, just go on a security walk and tell me what he's doing. hopefully if he's asleep, we're literally going to jump him while he's out. We don't want him to have access to anything before we get there.
Once it's confirmed that the inmate is still asleep, Nicholas finalizes the entry plan with his team.
Okay, he's dead asleep. You got a shotgun? You need to ditch the shotgun and go in second, or you're going in behind me. Go, I'll go hands on with Barton. Cool. I don't know, so I don't have to get dirty today?
No, I'll spare you.
Oh. All right, let's get this stuff secured.
Go, you want to take a shot?
With their plan in place, Linda, the team heads to the sleeping inmate cell. His name is Albert Cimino. While Cermano is strip-searched, the intelligence unit inspects his cell for the key.
See, like, if they hide stuff inside the toilet paper rolls, it's a nightmare to actually get in there and spot anything in there, especially the small items like razors and things like that.
Use one of your hands for your bottom lip down. Upper.
Usually they open up the split seams of the boxers and they try to re-sew to hide stuff in there.
Okay, run your fingers through your hair. Okay, take your boxes off and hand them to me.
Though the key has yet to turn up, intelligence officers find other contraband. It involves the one thing Cermano treasures the most, his books.
These are messages that one gang member is writing to another. These messages will go throughout the facility, and that way they'll know that these guys are here. They'll also write other messages that have to do with, you know, same thing, like trying to get people, assault people, or whatever. And they're actually able to hand these over to the staff, and the staff sometimes misses it in the searches and actually passes the messages over to other inmates.
When I seen them jump on me, I was like, oh, hell no. I thought they were going to pick me up and throw me on the ground. I was like, oh, this. But I just didn't resist either because I didn't want to get tased. You know what I mean? I was like, I ain't trying to put a taser.
Search didn't turn up anything, which is good. We did find inside his boxers the opening where there possibly could have been something hidden, but it wasn't there at the time we did the search. So right now we're calling it off, and we'll continue to monitor the situation, see where it goes.
I'm not trying to do nothing to get any more charges or keep myself more locked down than what I am, because we barely get to come out as it is.
All right, I'm
coming up. Two versions of a jailhouse fight.
Because I'm coming down the steps, and I turn my head away, look to the side, keep running up the swing, that's how the fight started.
If it's a one-on-one fight, it's a dead issue now, you know what I mean?
This subject matter, viewer discretion is advised.
I need that dude up there, strip search.
The special response teams at the Maricopa County Jail in Phoenix, Arizona, have a broad range of responsibilities. They respond in crisis situations, conduct cell inspections for weapons and drugs.
Once they're strip searched, they're going into the rec yard.
And escort high-profile inmates to court, to name a few. But sometimes, these elite law enforcement officers find themselves taking on very different duties.
Gentlemen, get up.
1 minute it can be exciting, and 1 minute it can be, you know, you're looking through garbage. So, I mean, it's got its ups and downs, but for the most part, it's got its ups.
Having recently shaken down inmate Albert Cermano,
let me see your hands. Let me see your hands.
Who they incorrectly suspected of having a homemade cuff key, they're now in search of another key, a missing key.
belief is that we hope either an officer inadvertently took him home and hasn't realized it yet, but apparently all the phone calls have been made, and everyone claims they don't have the key. So what we're going to do is we're going to tear this level apart. I want YouTube, you're going to check the clinic. Okay, YouTube, start tearing this core apart, give her a hand. We're going to literally tear this whole level apart, cell by cell.
The missing key is to the jail's armory, where non-lethal, though still very dangerous, weapons are stored.
Start tearing the place apart.
Since the missing armory keys could very well be in the hands of an inmate by now, no part of the jail is left out of the search.
They could have cut out space inside the books to plan to steal the keys. And then once they did, hit them in here, not thinking, oh, they won't check in the chapel.
Help me out in here. But start from behind the door. Work this way. I already got all this out.
But as his officers turn the unit upside down, Sergeant Nicholas gets wind of new information that further complicates matters.
The set of keys for the armory, for some reason, we've got a bathroom key on there, and a lot of civilians borrow that key to use the restroom. So now the whole missing keys just got worse. So not only may an officer have misplaced it, but we might have a nurse, a religious volunteer, or somebody may have used the restroom, stuck it in their pocket, and gone home. So, note to self, take bathroom key off of armory key set.
While the key could be almost anywhere in this massive jail system, it's probably not with Cecil Kunkel. He's in the middle of a 20-day lockdown for having fought with another inmate.
It's a one-on-one fight, and it's a dead issue now, you know what I mean? It is what it is. It's no big deal. It's something that always happens. It ain't nothing, you know what I'm saying? That's all there is to it, you know?
Kunkel claims his conflict with inmate Robert Hurd was just a run-of-the-mill jailhouse fight. But Hurd says Kunkel sucker punched him to avoid a fight with a bigger inmate who was angry that Kunkel was flaunting his tattoos.
When he got called out by the big black guy, he was nervous to fight that certain person. So he was looking for a plea bargain, basically, a way out, a way to sign out. So the way to sign out is to run up in the middle of the pod where his camera's at and run up and swing on somebody so the police can see what's going on and come break it up. And that way he get moved so he won't ever have to face that man. So as I'm coming down the steps, one of my people's asked something to me, and I turn my head away, look to the side, he run up and swing. That's how the fight started.
After officials investigated the fight and viewed the surveillance footage, they cleared Hurd of any wrongdoing and gave Kunkel additional time in segregation.
They go to show all them tattoos and all them swastikas don't mean nothing. You know what I mean? If you can't stand behind it and stand on it, you know what I'm saying? Or be a man and handle your own situation with the person who you got a problem with. Don't try to pick a fight with the little person and still get beat up. I mean, it kind of speaks for itself.
Though Kunkel has made some enemies during his time at Maricopa, he also has his supporters.
It seems like every pod we go into, there's guys who are angry.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, man, because he's not a bad guy, you know? And he just, I don't think people like him. I don't know why. There's other people that have tattoos, you know? Everyone wants to get at him.
Josh Pike has known Kunkel's family for most of his life. And while they're not relatives, he thinks of Kunkel as his cousin.
Look, there's my cousin.
Hey. Who are you?
I can't really answer that one. I'm not sure. I mean, because of his tattoos?
Yeah, he's got a huge swastika.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, that doesn't mean you're a racist. You know what I mean? That doesn't signify that you're a racist. That I can't talk about. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, I can't talk about that. That's it's like kind of like our thing. You know what I mean? It's like as far as being a convict.
While Pike wouldn't say what Kunkel's tattoos signify, he has an unlikely ally in his claims that Kunkel is not a racist.
I know some real white boys is real racist. He's not one of them. Because real skinheads, they don't get hot. You know what I mean? So it's like he's a nobody, you know.
What do you think, like, when you see a swastika in his head and all that stuff?
First off, you know, I may feel a little hot. You know, that's natural. But when I look at the person that it is and I find out about that person, where that person is, it's like they're ignorant. So it's like funny to me, though. So I just laugh it off, like, haha, just don't disrespect me, I won't disrespect you.
After his stay in segregation, Kunkel is less interested in respecting any of his fellow inmates than he is in just putting them all behind him.
On Tuesday? All right, thank you. All right, I start trial Tuesday. Start picking my jury on Tuesday. Yeah. Let's go from there, I guess.
Knowing he would soon be facing a jury, Kunkel's lawyer also advised him to grow his hair.
Because when you go in there, like, looking the way I look, I mean, people are like, damn, this dude's been in prison all of his life. He's got to be up, you know what I mean? I don't want people to think that about me, you know what I mean?
They offered me 3 plea bargains already, and I turned all of them down because I believe
that at least one person on that jury panel will be like, you know what, he wasn't trapped, and I can't convict him on that.
And if I didn't feel that way, I would have took the plea bargain a long time ago. Let's see what they got to say about it. You know, I'm willing to roll the dice.
Albert Sermano tries unsuccessfully to cut a deal to avoid a death sentence.
They denied the swing fight alive, so I asked my lawyer to plead for the natural life.
And in another part of Maricopa, his mother comes to terms with her part in the murder that landed them here.
I just want to hold my baby one time before he goes to let him know that I love him and that I'm sorry for being the mom that I was.
She conquered the octagon. Road.
Don't come to Arizona and do crime. You come on vacation, you leave on probation.
Though he has spent almost half of his life incarcerated for a variety of crimes, Cecil Kunkel is about to defend himself in court for the first time.
You're see, all right, buddy, I love you. You see, there's trouble, all right? Let me know what's going on. Hey, cut your hair.
I know, dog, I'm in trial.
With jury selection completed, his trial for selling stolen checks to an undercover police officer is about to get underway.
I made my fair share of mistakes, but I mean, damn, I got set up this time, you know what I mean?
Kunkel heads through an underground tunnel from the Maricopa County Jail to the courthouse, where he will entrust his fate to 12 strangers.
And hopefully they believe my story, you know what I mean? Because if they don't, then, like I said, man, I'm done. It's all over but the crying, you know? If they come back to say I'm guilty, my mindset's going to be like, it's going to be f***ed up. The real monster's going to come out.
Unlike Kunkel, Albert Sermano, facing a possible death sentence for murder, was hoping to avoid a jury and cut a deal for 25 to life. But he's just gotten word that the prosecutor said, no way. So now it's on to plan B, letting his lawyers submit a plea bargain for natural life, meaning he will never be a free man.
I've asked my lawyer to ask for it because they denied the swing fight alive, so I asked him to plead for the natural life. And he was telling me that's probably my best bet, too, because he says you don't even see a 50-50 chance of me winning my case. So I just said, you know, it.
But there was a development with one of Sermano's co-defendants. His mother, Connie, housed 4 miles away in Maricopa's women's facility, has just pled guilty for her role in the murder. But she says that now she's more concerned about Albert than she is herself.
I found out Friday that he's going to sign a paper, I don't know, for natural life. I broke down in the pod. All the girls hugged me and told me it's going to be okay. But they just don't understand. Nobody in here can understand if they don't have their kids in here incarcerated. I just want to hold my baby one time before he goes to let him know that I love him and that I'm sorry for being the mom that I was. And just for him to stay strong. He has a road to go. There's a lot of evidence against my son.
Connie is facing a sentence of at least 25 to life. Her other son, Carlos, has also signed a 25 to life deal for his role in the killing.
25 to life is where you can have a chance to have parole. And natural life, you'll never be able to come out again. You will die there. There's times that I want to end my life because of it. I just can't believe that we're here.
I had
can't believe that my sons are... I'll never see my sons again, my boyfriend again. Just off of one mistake.
Sermano now holds out hope that the prosecutor will quickly accept his plea proposal for natural life. If for no other reason, he might get to sign the paperwork at the same time his mother signs hers.
This is my last time ever going to see my mom, so hopefully they let me have this court date on the 23rd and see what happens. Be able to hug her one more time, and that's it.
Cecil Kunkel's future is largely in his own hands now. With his trial about to get underway, he is released from his courtroom holding cell. And although he will be allowed to change into civilian clothing to face the jury will never know that underneath his shirt is a stun belt to prevent any misconduct.
This thing ain't gonna go off now, is it?
I don't know. It depends if it gets squirrely big off. It's kind of sensitive.
You won one of those before?
No.
First time?
First time?
Yeah. First time for everything, you know?
You know what it is?
I guess it's some type of taser device, I guess. I don't know. I don't want to know what it is. It's true.
Later, Kunkel's moment of truth finally arrives.
You do solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
He is about to take the stand and hopes to convince a jury that he only sold stolen checks to an undercover officer because he was entrapped.
Do you remember the events that everybody was talking about?
Yes, I do. Very well.
In order to have any hope of getting an acquittal, Kunkel's attorney, Brian Borelli, must establish that it was never Kunkel's idea to sell the checks, but that he was urged to commit the crime by the undercover officer.
Now, before you met the detective, had you ever planned to sell people's checks before that?
Absolutely not. I went up on a truck and I asked him if he was interested in buying cereal. And he said he's really not into that type of merchandise. But if I come across any checks or credit cards, he would be interested in that type of merchandise.
Did you know someone you could get them from?
I had an idea of somebody I can get them from.
Now, after your whole conversation with the detective, what did you think he would do if you brought him checks?
Well, I was under the impression he wanted to buy them.
If you hadn't met the detective, would you have ever sold anyone's checks?
No. If I wouldn't have never met him, I wouldn't be here right now.
Thank you.
Kunkel must now face off against the prosecutor.
And the first thing that you asked Detective, and did you see the other person in the car?
Yes.
Okay, and that was Detective?
Yes.
And so the first thing you said to them is, hey, you guys cops?
Yeah.
So you wondered if they were cops?
Yes, I did.
So you knew what you were doing was wrong?
No. I wasn't trying to get wrapped up in anything bad because... Like I said, like I was telling the jury earlier, where I'm from, the neighborhood that I'm from, there's police everywhere. So I didn't want to get wrapped up in something like I am in now, is what I'm saying.
All right. Nothing else, Judge.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, no jury questions. And thank you very much, Ms. Kunkel.
Thank you.
After Kunkel's testimony, Brian Borelli makes his closing arguments to the jury.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Some of you may believe Cecil's no angel. He sold the checks. I don't care what the officers did. But remember what the judge told you. You can believe the law is wrong, but you must follow the law. The law says if it was the officer's idea, which it was, if the officer urged or induced him, which he did, unless Cecil was predisposed to commit this crime already, we must find him not guilty. Ladies and gentlemen, I ask that you follow the law. I ask that you find Cecil not guilty.
All right, thank you, Mr. Brody.
With the jury convened, all that's left for Kunkel is the waiting. Coming up, officers get a break in the missing Armory King mystery. A good day for Sergeant David Nicholas and his special response team. They had been searching for a lost key to the jail's armory, where a battery of weapons is stored.
Miraculously, then he's just appeared. They just showed up out of nowhere, found him on a desktop with no one to be seen. Out of embarrassment, someone asked him to take a set of keys home, didn't want anyone to find out about it. The next morning, snuck him back.
Do they still keep the bathroom key with the armory key?
I do believe they have reconfigured their key sets and how they secure them, but give it 6 months, it'll happen again, and we'll go to plan C. That's it. Keys found, case closed.
In a nearby courtroom, Cecil Kunkel's case is still open, but not for long. He's about to find out whether he will spend the next 15 to 61 years in prison for selling stolen checks to an undercover officer.
All right, so has the jury reached a verdict?
No, we haven't.
Is it your position that you think that you're hopelessly deadlocked? You don't think any further deliberations would help you reach a decision?
Right.
Okay. Everybody's of the same opinion. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the court will declare this trial and excuse the jury.
The jury's inability to reach a verdict means Kunkel's case will be tried again. But not being found guilty has left him energized.
Well, you know what? We're getting ready to go for round two.
I guess it was a deadlock, so get ready to go again. You know what I mean? I was hoping to walk today, but obviously we had some people that believe I was guilty and some felt that I wasn't. So let's go back to trial. You know what I mean? It ain't no big deal to me.
How'd you feel about the black judge when you walked in?
I thought it was a good thing, to tell you the truth.
How come?
How come? Because because the majority of the judges out here, I'm gonna send your ass up the river, quit. I'm not saying just because it's black you give me a break or nothing like that, but like I said, I'm in here for them setting me up.
But a retrial wasn't meant to be. A couple of weeks later, Kunkel's lawyer reached a deal with the prosecutor. Kunkel will soon walk out of jail with one. Before he leaves, Kunkel has decided to return to his pre-trial look.
We're going to shave this dirt off my head.
Why's that?
Because I'm tired of having it.
It's just a show for a minute.
People see me with all the tattoos and they think, you know, they're going to think what they want. But there's, you know what I mean? You got to get to know me as a person, as a man, as a human, you know what I mean? Before you jump to conclusions, you know what I'm saying? If you take the time to get to know me, you'll see, man, that, you know, I feel I'm a caring person, a loving person, a person that has respect, that respects others, regardless of your race, gender, whatever, you know what I mean? But if you cross that line, then, you know, it is what it is, man. I just take day at a time, you know what I'm saying? I'm not here to change people's feelings, you know what I'm saying? Either you like me or you don't, you know what I mean? If you don't like me, tell me. I don't give a damn, you know what I mean?
What do you think?
Yeah, it's good.
Ready to get out?
I hit it with the razor tonight, yeah.
It's the problem.
All right,
Cecil, what's next?
Beautiful women, and some good food.
But even Kunkel's surrogate cousin, Josh Pike, predicts the good times might not last for long.
6 months to a year. If he came back by then, he should be out for a little while.
Well, I'm happy that he's out, but I'm pissed that they let his ass out.
Why?
I want to beat him up. I want to beat him up now. Look at him. You know what, though? That gives me hope, though, because if that tattooed ass, they let him out, then there's hope for me.
Well, there's a story of Cecil Kunkel. Evidently a skinhead, got tattoos all over him and got a swastika on his head and everything, but he stands tall. He stays away from gangs inside the jail and remains aloof and plays it his way, and he goes into court and says, prove it. And he walked. And that's a good example of And also how he stood his own in the beginning of that show. He's going up, I believe, some stairs or walking through, and there's these blacks are coming at him, and they don't like his tattoos, and he cold cocks one of them. And then they come across with all this nonsense, jive talk, but he did it. And he sits in his cell. He doesn't apologize to anybody. Now, that's Sheriff Alpaio's jail down there. They got thousands of people in the jails in Phoenix and around Phoenix. It's amazing. But the conservative right-wingers, you know, they like Joe Alpaio. I don't like him. I'm not saying everything he does is wrong, but I'm saying he's a, you know, strict so-called law and order type thing and guy, and the right wing and their Old Testament justice tend to go overboard, and they like him because of that. So, but anyhow, I'm sorry, I don't like Joe Alpaio because I know what he's getting away with a lot of white prisoners. And a lot of the right-wingers like him because they see him being mean to Mexicans and maybe some blacks. But they forget about all the meanness he's directing towards white prisoners and white racially conscious prisoners. I have another story, but I think I'll run it tomorrow. It's a rather long story, but I think it's something that you really appreciate. It's about a man back in the 70s. Who got involved with cocaine, got down into Central America, and then he was trying to traffic in cocaine. He got caught. He got thrown in a Mexican prison, and he developed a scheme to get out of prison, a prison that had nobody break out of this prison since 1912 when Pancho Villa broke out of the prison, and this elaborate scheme and how he carried it out and how... how he made it out and escaped from that prison. I think we'll run that tomorrow. Now, to show you how paranoid the diversity crowd are and the race mixers and the people that work for them, I checked on Vista Print about printing up some non-equal decals. Now, these are simply small 1-inch decals without any writing on it at all. So all you see is a symbol, and they refuse to print them. Now, a lot of times we're going to froth at the mouth, get all upset and everything else, but I think it's respect in a way that they're scared. They're paranoid. They're absolutely paranoid with any form of fight back, push back, white racism. So we'll just have to find some greedy kike to do the job or some Asian or Arab, because they'll do it for anybody. Yeah, so then, you know, they Vista Print can kiss my white ass. Anyhow, if you can't get the decals printed, you can the black felt pen does a good job. Anyhow, it only takes you a second to put it on something, especially on something that's put out by our opposition. Put that not equal sign right over the top of it. Then they got to get rid of the whole thing. I had the same problem with a local printer here in town, and also with Staples. Staples, they got their snitches, or whatever you want to call, looking for anything racial that somebody might try to print there. However, you can, if you make a master up, and you get all the paper, buy the paper and get it all ready, you can do it without them even really knowing it, so... That's probably the route I'll have to go. For those of you who thought that the people in Britain are waking up any more than the people in the white people in the United States are waking up, the anti-immigration party in Britain only got two seats, meeting after all this degradation and rot in Britain, and just like the United States, the white people still haven't woken up. So... they're going to have to feel. To show you how stupid these white right-wingers are, on the 5 on Fox the other night, had this stupid broad, I think she's a Jew, but she don't have to be, say that it was the Klan who marched in Skokie, Illinois. Yeah, the Klan. And then she nobody wants to say that a Jew ran the operation. The Jew. They don't want to say that. The Skokie thing was set up by a Jew. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Covington was there too, I believe. Yeah. Wonder why he couldn't figure out that his partner there was Jewish. Yeah, the beloved Nazi leader that pioneered the Skokie March that never happened was a Jew, Frank Cohen, and he was a child molester. And he was arrested for that after the Skokie run. And he was Harold Covington, his buddy there. So anyhow, so much for the Hollywood Nazis. Now, whenever you get a chance to get on a radio talk show and call in, remind them of that. I think it's something that needs to be promoted, because the other side, that just shows you how dishonest both the right wing and the left wing are. That's something that should be talked about. What's this Jew running the Nazi party? Well, here's a note from one of our lone wolf agents. The EU in Brussels is demanding that all 28 members take in and disperse all black nigger migrants picked up in the Mediterranean throughout the population of Europe. This is over 111,000, with many thousands more en route. Germany's government is all for it, and Merkel loves the idea as well as most other Jew-ridden countries, like Holland, Switzerland, and the like. The only countries refusing so far are the Eastern European countries such as Hungary, Estonia, Lithuania, and so forth. And believe it or not, England. I guess England had to finally admit it's broke. The EU has scheduled talks to join with the UN for military help in making this all happen smoothly, using the guise of stopping the smugglers and human trafficking. But we know why. Why not just build a bridge from Tripoli to Italy and give every Brussels sprout a fiat to tour Europe at his or her leisure? This is the quick summary of what was reported on Al Jazeera this morning. Hope it is useful, although we knew it was coming. Camp of the Saints seems sort of far-fetched and 100 years away when I read it 25 years ago, but now it's reality. Sure is. Thanks, Lone Wolf Reporter. Well, I liked what they said about what Putin said about the pact, Molotov, German attack, agreement back in World War II, prior to World War II, it's the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact. Now, if they would have kept that alliance, it would have headed off World War II, and that would have been great. So the Russian president has deviated from his own previous position, as well as that of his Soviet and post-Soviet predecessors, by trying to paint the 1939 National Socialist Soviet Alliance in a positive light. Well, it was a good thing. But they're trying to bring up the Polish thing all over again. Now, Poland was always trying to play both ends against the middle. Poland was trying to play as a power broker, and Poland's heyday was long gone. So to sacrifice Poland to head off the Second World War would have been well worth it, as far as I'm concerned, and I have nothing against the Polish people. But their leaders, prior to World War II, were always playing the big shots and power brokers, and then making a deal with England, too. That was a bad thing. Now, the Jews are crying in their beer about this position by Putin, but they don't seem to want to accept the fact that if there had not been World War II, so many, many, many Jews would not have been killed. It was a direct result of World War II that so many hundreds of thousands of Jews died, along with millions of non-Jews. So, as far as I'm concerned, the Molotov-Ribbentrop pact was a great thing, and they should have kept it. Well, here's a note from our good friend from a wolf man from New York City. Dear T.T., given to the average yokel, the riots in Ferguson, Missouri, and in Baltimore, have to show what the niggers are really like. The news media can't really black that out, so they make up the usual excuses. I think there is hope in Queens, New York, after a New York City police officer named Brian Moore was shot. When they caught up with the nigger that did it, the shooting, he was crying for his mommy. Anyone who has run across a lot of blacks and actually dealt with them realizes one or most of them are the biggest pussies. You might run across one or two that are racially tough. But when faced with the real retaliation, by and large, they cut and run. A friend of mine once said, if you shoot one, the rest are easily corralled. How do you think they were enslaved in the first place? Wolf, New York. Well, thank you for your input there, young man. Boy, some people get a little screwed up. The far-right Hungarian politician, who was an outspoken anti-Jew, made a shocking discovery. He was actually Jewish. Skenar Zagigi was deputy leader of the far-right nationalist Jobbik Party when he found out. He had been leader of the party's paramilitary wing when he found out his grandmother had been in Auschwitz and wore a plaster to conceal the tattoo number on her arm. Since that moment 3 years ago, Zagigbi has become an Orthodox Jew, visiting Auschwitz himself, and is now an anti-racist speaker. Okay, he has publicly burned his own biography. I believe in the resurrection of the Hungarian nation was the title. The leader of the Jobbik party allegedly suggested that Zagigbi remain a member as a tame Jew. But Zagigbi turned his back on the Nationalist Party, who have been described as anti-Jew. Zagigbi told BBC anti-Semitism doesn't need Jews because it's based on a false premise. It is a projection of one's own fears and lack of self-esteem. The paradox of Hungarian nationalism is that we're proud of our own achievements, but we're not willing to look at those of other people's. He says, we're afraid of their cultures. Might be as valuable as ours. Well, I never understood why, if a Baptist can quit being a Baptist, a Catholic quit being a Catholic, why can't a Jew quit being a Jew? I know a lot of the right wing base it on that it's racial. But in most cases, it's not racial at all. It may be ethnic. These tent dwellers in the Middle East certainly lived together a lot, but they were a mixed multitude, supposedly, when they came out of Egypt. So why don't the guy just say, that's the way it goes. I'm still a Hungarian nationalist, and forget about it. But now he's going crazy the other way, so... That's the way people are. Strange. They're very strange. Wait a minute here. Well, the production team behind the 2008 foreign Oscar nominee, the Bader-Meinhof Complex film about the German left-wing terrorists in the 1970s, is turning to a modern-day neo-Nazis for its latest production. Constantine Film was picked up adaptation rights to the Heimatschutz, a nonfiction book about the neo-Nazi gang, the NSU, from Stefan Aust, author of the book on which the Bader-Meinhof complex was based. Aust co-authored Heimatschutz with the German journalist and terrorism expert Dick Lobb. Well, let's see here. The NSU is a violent neo-Nazi cell blamed for a series of racially motivated murders in Germany between 2000 and 2007, as well as several bank robberies and two nail bomb attacks. Two members of the gang killed themselves after a botched bank raid in 2013. A surviving member, Beit Shape, is currently on trial. The case has also raised serious questions about the German intelligence agencies, which failed to detect the gang as they carried out their killings. Constantine's film, Oliver Berhan, who's produced the film version of Heimatschutz with Martin Moskowitz, Moskowitz as executive producer. Well, there you go. That might be an interesting movie. In fact, I'd like to see that Bader-Meinhof movie, but I haven't seen it on the web where I could take a look at it. They were much like The Order, Bader-Meinhof, only their targets were a little higher up on the totem pole. As you may recall, they kidnapped a leading banker in Germany. His name escapes me at the moment. Stuffed him into a trunk and shot him full of holes. I'm sure there's a lot of people that lost their ass and all their money in their retirement in the last few years would like to see that happen to a lot of bankers. Oh, you wonder whatever happened to George Zimmerman down there in Florida? Well, George Zimmerman was shot and wounded Monday afternoon in Florida. Police said Zimmerman was shot in the face during his injuries. His injuries were minor, reported WFTV-TV. Zimmerman was involved in a shooting in Lake Mary about 12:45 p.m. as part of an ongoing dispute with another man, police said. A bullet hole was spotted in the passenger side window of Zimmerman's truck, which WESH-TV said, well, wait a minute, what did they say? I lost my place. Wait a minute. A witness said he recognized Zimmerman, who got out of his truck and walked to an ambulance that happened to be parked nearby. He walked normally into the ambulance, so he wasn't being helped or nothing, said witness Ricardo Barrer. Well, there you go. Somebody going to do him in sooner or later. I don't think he knows how to handle himself. No, I don't. Well, I bet you didn't know this. According to a report by CBS 13, Sacramento retailing giant Walmart is purchasing cheap water from the Sacramento Water District to drought-stricken California for less than a penny per gallon, and then selling it to the consumers for slightly less than a dollar. While other bottled water retailers, including Starbucks, which sells Ethos brand water, are moving their water sourcing out of California, Walmart continues to use water from the state. California is currently undergoing the worst drought in the state's history. Yes, I know. The Sacramento Municipal Water District sells water to bottler DS Services of America for 99 cents for every 748 gallons, the same rate as other commercial and residential customers. That water is then bottled and sold by Walmart for 88 cents per gallon, turning $1 of Sacramento water into $658 for Walmart and DS Services. According to public relations expert Doug Elmitz, the corporate giant has some explaining to do. It's certainly leaving a bad taste in everybody's mouth when you can fill up a swimming pool. If you're building a new home in West Sacramento, You can't water your lawn if you're living in this region. Elmet said, and to find out they're making a huge profit off this is just not right. Okay. That's good old Walmart for you. Well, one of our subscribers, one of our good friends, is recommending the new Ruger 10-22 takedown rifle. Item 11125, caliber 22 long rifle. Capacity 25-1. Stainless steel. Front sights, red fiber optic. Adjustable green fiber optic. Barrel length 16.25 inches. Let me see here, what's it got? Scope base adapter, detachable 35-round rotary magazine, black Kundura takedown case, polished stainless steel barrel, threaded barrel, Mini 14 style, flash suppressor, $486.13. I think I'll have to stick with my double-barrel shotgun. And a couple other little items I've got here. That's a lot of money, man. It's a lot of money. Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. I'll be back tomorrow on Tears Day. That's right, Tears Day. You take care and watch out for those mini Rugers. They're all around you. Don't stand too close to George Zimmerman. It's not safe.